Welcome along to William Hill's Politics Podcast, week three of the podcast, and the general election is getting ever nearer. Parliament has been dissolved, so the gloves are officially off. It's going to get fun between now and the election. Delighted to say that the Director of Media Relations at William Hill, Graham Sharp's on the line to discuss the latest odds and the big stories. Graham, any hopes that this might be a clean election were pretty much gone straight away. And I noticed that David Cameron's accused Labour of being pickpockets, and Boris Johnson's got stuck in as only he can. This could be a pretty feisty running, couldn't it?
Well, yes, yeah, situation normal, really, isn't it? That's what you expect and that's what you want. If they're going to bore us with this for 100 days, they might as well try and make it entertaining with a little bit of skullduggery and a bit of a bloodbath going on. And because, of course, they're not only jostling for position as to who forms the next government, but of course they're all jostling for position within their own parties as well, because each of the leaders is exposed as never before when it comes to an election. And there's every chance that there will be, I would say, possibly two or three leadership contests going on after the election. So, yes, they've got dual motives, these politicians, when it comes to general elections.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, this is so hard. As a whether you're viewing it as a member of the electorate, a punter, or both, it's so hard to keep a tab on everything that's going on. The major markets on the politics part of WilliamHill.com see the general election result and next prime minister betting, and the party seats as well. Interesting, Graham, that you've taken a £10,000 bet on a Tory majority this week. That's a fair chunk, that, isn't it?
That's a hefty wager, isn't it? It comes from a customer in Wiltshire. And yes, it's the biggest bet so far, speculating on which government we will actually see in power after the general election. Even so, it's a bold bet because he's taking what is the third favourite Conservative majority. As a result of that bet at 11-2, that price has shortened to 9-2. The Labour minority, which has also been nibbled at this week, that's 2-1 favourite. Conservative minority, 3-1. And then you're on to 11-2 Conservative Lib Dem coalition, what we've got at the moment as the fourth option. And then you're moving into all sorts of potential coalitions. But it's certainly interesting that somebody is prepared to risk that amount of money on what is not to be regarded by any means as any sort of certainty. So it shows there's a great appetite for speculating on the outcome of this election, and we've already seen that in terms of the £200,000 bet we've taken on the hung parliament, which, interestingly, although everybody's sort of assuming that's what's going to happen, since that bet was placed and a number of others around about that time at that price has pretty much stayed thereabouts, 2-9, 1-5. And you'd have thought if people regarded it as an absolute certainty, you'd be down to 10-1, 12-1 on by now. So maybe in the last few weeks, people might start to think, well, maybe everybody's not going to vote the way that they've been telling people they will. And just maybe one or other of the two will get a majority. And if they do, then we certainly see it as more likely to be the Tories than Labour, because we've got them 2-5 to win more seats than Labour, who are 7-4 to do vice versa.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because, you know, I'm neither a Labour voter or a Tory voter. I'm just kind of, you know, I probably would vote and have voted in the past on the party who I think will obviously give me and my family the best, you know, future in the short term, and the ones who I think are the right people to lead me. But I mean, at the moment, if there are other people like that, and I think there probably are more people like that than ever before, then you're waiting to hear some substance, aren't you, Graham? Really? I mean, we don't know if we can trust the figures that, you know, that David Cameron throws out and then won't, you know, kind of justify the figures. We don't know if Labour are to be trusted. This is going to come down to probably two key issues, isn't it? And they're probably going to be the economy and the NHS, do you think?
In a way, that's what the politicians want you to think, isn't it? And yes, it's almost anti-democratic in the way in which the big parties seem to be saying, well, we'll set the agenda. We don't really care what you're worried about. We'll tell you what we're prepared to tell you, which is in Labour's case that we're going to save the NHS, and in the Tories' case, where we're the people you can trust with the economy. And yes, and they basically force all their stormtroopers to stick to the party line on those stories. And so you can say, well, until and unless you get to read the whole of the manifestos for all of the parties, and if you've got a spare couple of weeks, you might have time to do that, you don't really know precisely what they're going to do. And even then, when they tell you it, they still seem to think, both parties, that a £10 billion gap in their costings doesn't really involve them in having to tell you how they intend to fill it, but such is life.
The leadership debates are obviously a key part of this process now. We saw the first of them, which was more like the Paxman show.
It was the Paxman
show,
wasn't it?
It was kind of embarrassing at times, wasn't it, how much more personality he has than both these two men who are vying to become Prime Minister.
I'm surprised they haven't offered him a seat somewhere.
You never know. It was interesting because, you know, just watching it from a and trying to be purely objective about it, I got the sense that maybe that Miliband maybe just edged it. But most of the polls afterwards gave it to Cameron, despite him seeming to come off the worst. I mean, the Guardian ICM poll gave him, I think it was 54% to 46% in terms of, you know, how he fared. And there were lots of other different types of polls. There were, it was 48 to 43 in terms of who was more convincing, 46 to 42 in Cameron's favour for the more appealing personality. Actually answering the questions asked, 44% to 37%. Miliband just doesn't convince people, does he?
He doesn't. That was a sort of artificial construct, though, wasn't it?
Yes.
It wasn't really a debate. It was individual interviews almost. And this seven leader debate later this week will be the real thing in a way. You know, they will all be looking at the whites of each other's eyes, seven of them, the Magnificent Seven standing around the podium in whichever way they do it. And I believe David Cameron is going to get the advantage of having the last word. And Natalie Bennett has to go first, which is probably going to daunt her even more than the whole thing might have done otherwise. Mm. And this is, of course, a new way of doing things. Some people think this will end up in an absolute fiasco with seven people trying to speak at once. But the idea is they all get 1 minute when they're not allowed to be interrupted on each question. But there'll still be plenty of time for open debate. And maybe like a horse race, you know, the draw may prove to be important. But again, with horse racing, you don't always know how important it was until after the race. So we might see here. And we've got what people may think is slightly surprising betting. And we're going in both instances, A, who wins it, and B, who finishes last. And we're deciding the outcome on a Comres instant poll, which will be carried out after the televised debate. And we make Nigel Farage 13-8 favourite. He's already been backed from 7-4, which was his initial price, to win. Mm. With David Cameron and Ed Miliband both at 3-1. Nicola Sturgeon 7-1. Nick Clegg at 9-1, and the two outsiders both at 20-1, Natalie Bennett and Leanne Wood of Plaid Cymru. And it's interesting on several levels, those prices, because, of course, Nick Clegg was the man who made his name.
Yes.
In the debate last time round, and 9-1 might look a big price on that basis.
Well, he's kind of like, in a sporting term, he's kind of like the one no one wants to be back, and, you know, he can only go... Surely it can only go better for Clegg than,
well,
you'd imagine.
Precisely.
I think that's a good price.
What has he got to lose, really? Yeah. You know, he's under pressure.
And he always comes across, we were just saying then about Paxman having more personality than the other two put together that he was interviewing at. I think, you know, of the three major leaders, if we're still calling the Lib Dems, you know, a major party at this moment in time, then he seems to be the most human of them, doesn't he,
I couldn't disagree with that. And definitely Cameron and Miliband will be more concerned with not saying anything wrong than with saying anything spectacularly right, in a way. They just don't want to make a mistake. They're like a football team that is going to go out for a draw, aren't they?
They are, yeah.
Whereas the others, they see the opportunity to really spark their own campaigns into action for different reasons. Nigel Farage wouldn't know how to play for a draw anyway, I'm sure, because he's never quite sure what he's going to say, even when he opens his mouth to say it. And the others haven't got anything to lose. Nicola Sturgeon, interestingly, is 7-1 to win. She's also 7-1 to lose. So we've got her bang in the middle in that respect. But in the market of who will finish last, it's between Natalie Bennett and Leanne Wood. And Natalie Bennett... she didn't do too well in her LBC interview a few weeks ago, where she dried up and couldn't answer the questions. But I'm a little surprised that Leanne Wood of the Plaid Cymru should be a joint favourite to finish last, because I've always found her quite an engaging speaker. And we've, as they've launched their manifesto as we're speaking today, we've got them 4-6 to end up with three or fewer seats, and 11-10 to end up with four or more. And she's already talking about making an arrangement after the election with one or other of the major parties, and you'd have to think it would be more likely to be Labour than it would to be the Tories.
Yeah, on a case-by-case basis, which seems to be the fashionable thing to say at the moment, that Plaid Cymru would back a minority Labour government. Mm. There just seemed to be a general feeling. That's why I was maybe a little bit surprised about that big bet on the Tories. There seems to be a general feeling of don't let the Tories back in amongst the minority parties, doesn't there? You know, I think you know the SNP have made it very clear, haven't they? Plaid Cymru seem to be doing the same sort of thing. And you wonder if maybe the chickens will come home to roost for the Tories in Wales from Scotland, where, and you know, you look at Northern Ireland as well, almost disregarded in terms of their economic situation. This could be what helps Labour over the line, couldn't it? You know, just to form that minority government and have some allies, in inverted commas, on a vote by vote basis.
It does, but then one wonders how much money you would put on that election, that government actually running its full term of 5 years. I know it's sort of engraved in law now that it has to, but obviously if it becomes a situation where it's totally ungovernable, then you know that would take precedent over the 5 year period. But it certainly is all to play for, and it does make it all the more interesting that there is a lot of time for things still to change, and these debates I think will give us. So I'm sure something quite significant will happen. I'm not quite sure what it'll be, but one way or the other, somebody will either make an absolute horlicks of it, or somebody will come out, you know, really shining, and looking much more, you know, in the way the Americans do it with their presidential campaigns, much more a leader of people. And as to which one that will be, well, you pay your money and takes your choice.
Lots of specials on the William Hill politics page. A few around Nick Clegg as well. We were just talking about his performance last year and whether he can emulate that and give his party a boost. It was interesting. I think it was maybe last Sunday or the Sunday before, listening to Paddy Ashdown obviously talking about Nick Clegg in glowing terms. There are odds on who will be the next Lib Dem leader, and we're also betting on whether what Nick Clegg will be doing effectively after the election, aren't we?
Yes, and I think he's 5-2 on, no longer to be leader by the end of this year, 7-4 to still be there. I think possibly there are worse 7-4 bets than that. He's probably got half a chance, because already within the party, when they're not looking for a new leader, the guy who's been odds on favourite for some while, Tim Farron, currently 4-7, seems to be getting a bit of a kicking from other senior members of the party, which doesn't bode well for his prospects should that vacancy come along. You can't, I would have thought, see Vince Cable, who's the 6-1 second favourite, getting the job, because it would be, by definition, nothing more than a temporary post for him, because with the best will in the world, Vince is not in the first flush of youth, and you think they would want to go for somebody who's likely to be around a little bit longer than him. Norman Lamb at 7-1, Ed Davey at 9-1. And of course, if you're prepared to take a real chance, Danny Alexander, who's been one of the highest profile Lib Dems all the way through their coalition government, he's a 12-1 shot. But you shouldn't forget that he's not that fancied even to get back into Parliament in his own constituency. So if you back him, you've got to take that into account as well.
I think I tend to agree with you on the Nick Clegg situation. There's no one in that list that really stands out as being, you know, a leader. And, you know, and Nick Clegg's tried in the past, hasn't he, to point out, look, you know, this is new territory for us. And he's had a rough ride of it, hasn't he, to be fair, Nick Clegg? He's taken the brunt of everything that's been wrong with the coalition, really, hasn't he?
Well, you think he would have succeeded probably now in the party, and it may have been part of their strategy in lowering people's expectations for what they can actually achieve in this election. So, you know, they start with 57 seats, and people are saying, oh, they'll be lucky to end up with 24 maybe. And if they play along with that, should they then go and manage to get 30 or 35, instead of that then being regarded as a disaster, you know, they've lost 22 seats. Everybody's saying, oh, well, you know, that's 10 more than we expected them to get. They've done really well. Nick Clegg's come back and they look, you know, they look quite strong. And, oh, look, they could well be in coalition government again as a result of that. So his time could come again, and then the safe pair of hands. You know, he didn't make it, all right, the obvious early big blunder that their whole party made, which set them on the back foot from the start. You know, that'll have receded into the background, and maybe they will say, okay, let's give him another go. And who knows if there's likely to be another election coming along sooner rather than later. That, again, may be the best thing to do.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating. You wonder, I'm just looking at the odds for the composition of the next government. The Labour minority is 2-1, Conservative minority 3-1, the Conservative majority 9-2. The same coalition again, the Conservatives, Lib Dems 11-2. that Labour Lib Dem coalition. I mean, it would be if they were to get enough seats and if Labour were to do well enough, 8-1. It's a more natural fit, isn't it? That Labour Lib Dem coalition, and the Lib Dems would—they've been in government. You know, they've got some experience in it. Is that's not beyond the realms of possibility, is it?
And then you could also see Labour maybe having agreements with other parties that would support them at least in the short term, and that could prove quite a logical fit. But you've still got this big question at the moment of if nobody does get an overall majority, who has got the right to go first to try and form a government? And, the Conservatives seem to say, well, we've got the Prime Minister, so we can go first. And Labour seem to be looking into legal reasons why that shouldn't or may not be the case. So even that's going to be a confused issue, I think, after if the hung parliament, which everybody expects, obliges. You know, is a matter of a foot race to get to the Buckhouse and say to the Queen, well, I can do a government quick before this other guy turns up with his rubbish coalition, let me in. It took 5 days to sort it out last time round, and who's to say it couldn't take 5 weeks or even 5 months this time?
That vision, just to continue with the different sporting analogies we use, I would like to see the party leaders in mascot outfits racing to the Queen. That would give us an extra betting market. Who would reach the Queen first in a foot race? I think Clegg. I'd go Clegg, although Farage might use some elbows, I think.
Cameron's the regular runner, isn't he? He likes to be seen puffing around Hyde Park or wherever it is in his trainers, so he might have the edge there.
Graham, I think that'll do us for today.
I think it will.
Thank you very much. Graham Sharp, the Director of Media Relations at William Hill, with all the latest betting on UK politics and the general election, of course. It's all available at williamhill.com, so check out the many and varied markets there. Thanks, Graham.
All right, Lee.
Cheers, Graham. If you're listening to this on Audio Boom, thanks very much. You can also download the podcast at iTunes, and we'll deliver it to you every single week if you subscribe via iTunes. Also available, of course, on williamhill.com on the podcast page. If you haven't bet on any of the markets that we've discussed this week, then very best of luck.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.